You're listening to the UCB Longform Conversations podcast, in-depth conversations with performers and teachers from the best alternative comedy theater on the planet. In today's episode, the podcast will take a break from our normal interview format, instead presenting a palate cleanser, where UCB teachers and staff present official UCB news and updates, focus on a specific element of longform improv, and offer experimental one-off episodes. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center.
Warning. What you're about to hear is an extremely nerdy conversation about long-form improv comedy.
Welcome to the UCB Longform Conversations podcast. From New York City, I'm Nate Russell. Hey, everybody. This is a special palate cleanser episode of this show. We're going to pick up with our La Ronde as it tracks back to Los Angeles next week. But today we have a very special episode with a very special guest. And in fact, this is going to be a two-part episode. You can listen to part one here on this feed, which is coming out right now while you're listening to it. And tomorrow, on Tuesday, you can pick up part two of this conversation where we go into the production side of Doug's brain on the UCB Digital Podcast, which you can also find at itunes.com/UCB Comedy. So part two coming out tomorrow. But let's dig into part one. I just spoiled it. Doug Moe is here. Hey, Doug.
Hi.
Welcome, my man. And we're doing this episode because you are now a published author in book form. I'm holding the book in my hand. Congratulations.
Yeah, I can verify for the podcast audience. He has the book. He's holding it.
I'm holding it. It has a good weight to it.
Thank you.
I've read the book. It's very funny, man.
You read the whole book?
I read the whole book.
Wow.
I prepared, dude. I prepared.
That's good. No, I'm not sure when I wrote it, I wasn't sure if people would actually like read it. You know what I mean? Like, it's their
sure.
job, but.
No, I get it. But no, I read it for
like,
sure.
Like, read the whole thing. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's a book you can dip in and out of.
Okay.
Well, that's my pitch for light readers.
You can dip in and out of it.
Don't worry about a whole book you have to finish.
Yeah, you can read one segment at a time.
Just read a little bit, friend.
How much of this is, I guess let's start at the beginning. The book is called Man Versus Child, One Dad's Guide to the Weirdness of Parenting. And this also sort of came from a one-man show and a blog, right? You had a one-man show at the theater that was sort of on this same subject matter. How did this book come about in that way?
Yes. Let's see. Almost 5 years ago, I think, I did a show here at the UCB Theater in New York called Doug Moe is a Bad Dad. And when I created that show, I also started this blog, Man Versus Child. And that's on Tumblr for the kids and the internet for everyone. And I started them both kind of at the same time, figuring one would sort of loosely support the other. I had it in my head that maybe it'd be good to do a blog, and, this is when blogs were hot.
Sure.
And I knew I wanted to do another stage show. So, I sort of started them at the same time. And then I'd say the book is a similar sensibility to the blog.
Yeah.
And the show, you know, it's all my sensibility, so similar in that way. And the show was about the idea or the feeling that you're a bad dad, less so that I was a bad dad. It wasn't like a confessional show where I weep at the audience, beg forgiveness. So the show at the time was a feeling like, oh, yeah, this is a hard thing and I might be bad at it and the worries thereof.
Mm-hmm.
So it was sort of like a one-man sketch show, I'd say. And then the blog entries and then the book from that, I think... Similarly, like maybe I've just kind of my daughter's old enough that I'm like maybe I was a bad dad, but I don't worry about it like that way I used to. But the blog also is just to kind of have a sense of humor about being a dad.
Cool.
In a non-cheesy, hopefully, way. And when I first started it, I felt that there weren't really blogs for dads that weren't like I don't know, or there were very few that were non-boring or. And there are lots of mom blogs that are like, I drink wine and I don't like my kids. And
right.
And there's lots of books like that, but not so many for dads. More of the dad ones are like, they're like, don't drop the baby, bro. Or,
sure.
They're very bro-y.
Yeah, and it also feels like that because your daughter is how old now?
She's 11.
So you sort of have embraced over that time too the sort of like dadness of yourself into your comedic persona, right?
Yes.
That's what that show is kind of like incubating, right? As you're absorbing the dadness of you into your comedy and into your writing and into your work.
Yeah.
So built on that.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, there's zero denying when you become a dad that you're a dad.
Yeah.
And as you know, people, when they find out you're a dad,
yeah,
that's part of what they assume about you. But anyway, and also I think it's a really interesting experience. So, like any interesting experience, I guess, like if I'd gone to Peru for 8 years and been like, yeah, I should write a show about that. Like any experience you have, you're trying to use.
Yeah.
And when I did the stage show, it had been like a couple years of me maybe trying to figure out what to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
I had done not an aborted show. That sounded weird on a dad conversation. But a show that we did a couple, spank kind of level
sure.
things with Will Hines and Kevin Cragg, called Sad Dads.
Sad Dads.
Which was a precursor. Where that was more like, it was three characters and different little
sure.
character bits. But then we didn't move forward with that. But that was sort of a first stab at
sure.
Also stabbing, maybe not advised for this.
You're on a roll.
On a roll. Rolls are fine. So that was like, it took a little while to kind of figure out what to do with it for the stage show. That just took a while to figure out.
Yeah, I can dig it. I want to go into the process of like turning stage into book and into like what other opportunities that might or might not be like opening up for you comedically in part two.
Yeah,
this
yeah.
is an improv podcast.
Yeah, good. Improv.
For the improv nerds.
For sure.
Let me just get this out of the way though. Like what is the pitch for the book if you're going to describe what the book is? And then we'll talk about like how you've sort of like balanced dad and career with improv as you sort of have gone along. So what's the pitch for the book?
So the pitch for the book is that there's dads everywhere. There's all these books, like I said, for moms to drink wine to and complain about their kids. But for dads, they're all like, yo, bro, you had a baby. Or they're like, hey, this looks like a drill manual, but it's how to diaper.
Sure.
You know? So this is sort of a guide for, I think, parents generally. Lots of moms have read it and thought it was funny. But it's trying to treat it with a little less preciousness.
Yeah.
Just be like, this is a funny, weird experience, and also be kind of, I don't know, a companion to you, kind of say, hey, don't worry, like, you're figuring it out, but that's good, and it'll be fine.
Yeah.
And there's lots of, and it's all little funny bits, so, there's things about, like, what should you name your baby, and it's a little comedic piece on that, and then there's stuff later on. It goes from before you have a child, which I call your fun, worthless life without a child.
Yeah.
And then when you've finally had a child, and then stuff like, is it okay to bring my baby to a bar? Which is like one of those topics that people who are parents are like, of course, I must go to bars.
Right.
And
it's a great place to bring them.
It's a great place to bring them. Also necessary.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone else in the world is like, before they have kids, they're like, why is there a baby at the bar? This is so wrong.
Yeah.
And just don't
yeah.
get it. So yeah. I think it's funny to kind of weigh in on stuff like that.
That's yeah. fun. Awesome. And where can people get it?
People can get it kind of anywhere. It's on Amazon, of course. It's
mm-hmm.
You can also Barnes & Noble, and your local bookstore should have it. If they don't have it, guys, ask for it. Yeah, because they'll maybe order it, and then some places have had it, and it's just like tucked away in a funny spot. So.
Cool. Yeah. Awesome. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think what I wanted to take the opportunity on this show to do, why this felt like this was more than just like one conversation, is that what's also relevant here is that like as the sort of like, leading authority of dad, of dads in the UCB like improv world.
Oh, man.
And as somebody who still does a weekly show at UCB,
yeah.
an improv show at UCB, like it's worth recognizing that as this community goes along in time, it's getting older. Too. There's still the 20-year-olds who come in the door every day and take classes, right?
For sure.
But there's a larger and larger segment of this community that's getting older and still maintaining a love of improv and a love of sort of like the performance in the community here at UCB. And you're somebody who's been around for, like, when did you start at UCB? It must have been.
I started, I think it was 98.
Wow.
I mean, it's insane to
that's
say
amazing.
That. And I think some of you youngins, when you've finally done something for like 10 years or 15
yeah.
years, you'd be like, I didn't know I was ever going to do that for that long.
Yeah.
But yeah, I started taking classes right before we got the second 22nd Street Theater at Solo Arts was my
yeah.
first class. And I had classes with Amy and Ian and Besser. I never had Walsh, but, you know.
There's still time.
What? There's still time.
Time.
I know.
Still
look,
time.
I'll find that guy.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, and I think it's interesting, isn't it? Like, there's not only, yeah, there's more and more people here with kids.
Yeah.
And, you know, the theater was new when I started. There wasn't, there are probably other theaters where that already happened, right? Where there are already people that were older that
sure.
stuck around long enough to have babies.
Yeah.
but because UCB was new when I started, you know, Delaney has a baby.
Sure.
Not a baby anymore,
now
but, you know, had a yeah. child.
Yeah.
And he's, like, the only one in front of me, really, that I thought. And, of course, Ian had had a child right when the theater was starting,
mm-hmm.
You know, Ian and Katie. But they were not, like, peers to me. They were, like, you know, they were my teachers. And,
yeah.
You know, so, yeah, it's really, it's interesting. And now I feel like there are lots of people with babies, even of the generation that I'm in
yeah.
That are just mostly in LA and stuff, but you know Bobby Moynihan and
yeah.
Hubel you
yeah.
know there's lots
yeah.
of people like that, St. Clair, and of course,
and kids with multiple babies too, Betsy and Ari, right?
Betsy and Ari,
yeah.
mm-hmm. you know, Scott Armstrong, lots of these people.
But I guess so I guess what I'm curious about, and so full disclosure out there too, like, we're also having this conversation too because I have two kids. My
yes.
second child was just born 3 months ago, so I'm in this sort of like back in the infant world,
oh boy.
Which is remarkably easier the second time.
Oh,
around.
Okay, really?
Yeah, it's so much easier, and it might be because this kid is just like super chill, but like it's so much easier.
Oh,
this
that's
time
interesting.
Yeah,
yeah.
yeah.
How old's your oldest again?
Three.
Three. Yeah.
So 3 and 3 months.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So like I'm definitely on the early side of this. So like I feel like I'm the target for this book.
Totally. Totally the target.
Yeah. But like it's definitely been increasingly like a balance, like having that additional sort of like outside life, you know, responsibility definitely changes your relationship with something that is like a love, like improv and doing comedy and that kind of work, like especially for improv, which is like not a job.
What?
Right?
Yeah.
But like it definitely changes your relationship to that thing, but it also like is like I find it to be a really fun sort of like exercise in creative, like, you know, creative release too. It's a good time to sort of like go do something that is so separate from that other set of real responsibilities, caring for a human life.
Oh, so you like, were saying that the release is improv, not the release is parenting.
Yeah.
The responsibility is improv.
Yeah.
They are really different. And I think it is an interesting thing. Once you become a parent, you have this, at least initially, you have this like total focus and also a big relief, I think. You know, I know when my daughter was born, I was, you know, it gave me kind of a feeling like, oh, there's so many of these things that I worry about aren't really that important. You know,
sure.
like it gives you like a healthy perspective on just like what's really important.
Yeah.
And so, but then after a little while, I did feel like, oh, I want to make sure I maintain this love, you know, this thing that I love. And you know, I don't know. It's weird. You have a balance where you're like, you have this very important job, parenting, but then once your kid gets a little older, I think you also then realize, like, okay, it's important to have your own life, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Which is something I think probably every parent probably went through, but I think maybe more so nowadays where just as dad to dad here, like,
sure.
Dads are, you know, you want to be involved and be a bit more like hands-on and stuff, and it's expected of you maybe in a
mm-hmm.
way that it wasn't always for other generations. So anyway, all that means that you're splitting focus in the way that women always have.
Sure.
Sadly for them.
Yeah, for sure. I guess for you, is there, you know, I definitely found that like the having a young child at home the one thing I was grateful for was at that time I didn't have such a huge rehearsal burden too.
Right.
That was like right when we moved from Harold Knight to The Weeknd.
Oh yeah.
The rehearsal burden with a kid seems like that could be potentially like really arduous.
I would think that would be very tricky. And this is like a, you know, a marriage situation.
Yeah.
you just have to kind of work it out. I know my wife has always been great about this, but when we were contemplating having a child, you know, she said, she was like, whatever, I mean, this is maybe wishful thinking, but it was a good thing to think for or shoot for, was she said, you know, whatever we want to do, we're going to do. And I think it's a mistake to go into probably marriage or probably definitely having kids thinking like, okay, we'll just change everything. Like, you'll have to change everything later. Like, mm-hmm. just don't change things you don't want to change, or like, but no, you don't have that expectation.
Sure.
You know? Rehearsals, yeah, I had the same thing. I mean, I think, you know, I don't remember now when Phoebe was born. I guess I was still on Mother at that point. Mm-hmm. We had a weekend show, so we weren't rehearsing. But then I actually did go back to rehearsing a little bit. But like I say, I teach on Tuesday nights.
Yeah.
I now have a Wednesday night show. Sometimes I'll have another show. You have to manage that, and that's probably like any kind of work situation.
Yeah, what was the timeline for you then? So when your daughter was born, you said Mother was still active and doing Saturday nights?
Yeah, I think so. She was born in 2006, but yeah. I don't know if you're if like we should,
I remember, no, it must have been Mother, because I remember going to like you guys' last show, and I didn't start here until like 08.
Yeah, no, now that I say that, absolutely she was, because I'm now thinking, like, I remember we were still on Mother, like when Scott, who was the second person on Mother to have a child, had his child. So, you know, yeah, so that was still going on, but then once that ended, I did have, like, I had a period of time where I wasn't doing a UCB show weekly. For a little while, I wasn't doing any show. But then I was doing other shows around. Like, I did a show at The Magnet with a lot of other people. Mm-hmm. And then I was put back on Harold Knight briefly for People.
That's right.
Which, you know, everyone knows. And then, yeah, and then started doing the Hot for Teacher thing. But it's... yeah, the timeline, I guess, was like she was born, but it was during Mother. And also I did a stage show. Like, I had a sketch show up at that time as well. So I would bring her to rehearsals for that. Like, we had a daytime rehearsal, you know. And I'd be like, okay, here we go. And it'd be like child asleep in a stroller, you know, on the stage while we did a tech rehearsal or whatever.
Yeah. Is there, and were you also, did you ever do the audition thing where you bring the baby to the audition?
All the time.
Yeah.
So I would, you know, it would depend a little bit. I think what everyone has to manage, this is like finances, marriage, like your whole life, how to figure it out. But, you know, mostly for like commercial auditions, at least initially I was like, well, it's like I have free time all the time. And so we'll just like get a babysitter when I need it. And then it was like, nah, that's like way too stressful to figure out. So there were some days we'd have a definite babysitter, like it'd be like Tuesdays and Thursdays or something. But there were many other times when, so then I'd be like, peace out. And we would just like eat that financially. If I didn't have auditions, it was like, well, that's the price of me living my life.
Yeah.
But then many times it'd be like, well, I only have one audition, or I don't know. Sometimes I had two, and I'd like tote her from one to the next. it is what it is.
Yeah.
Have you done that?
I haven't done much yet, but we've also been daycare parents.
Yes.
So like, because both of us are at a job, you know, during the day, like
makes total sense.
It isn't that patchwork. But then it's more like if there's something that comes up outside of those windows of when the daycare is open, it's like that means it's like pulling your hair out, like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
What do we do?
Oh, yeah. And I mean, it was hilarious at times because I'd roll in with the stroller and, you know, it'd be like, okay, I need someone to just watch her for like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And luckily, I think even though actors are like sketchy people, they would like, there are other dads, they'd just be like, yeah, I'll watch her, you know, like, or anybody just sitting around. But there were times it'd be like, hand off to almost total stranger, you know.
Territory, yeah.
See you in a minute. Yeah. Or I once brought her into a booth like this, you know, like for a voiceover thing.
Sure.
And like, because she was asleep and was just like, please don't wake up, baby.
That's really funny.
Yeah. One time I brought her into like a call. I didn't know it was a callback session. Uh-huh. So I was like, just going to bring her in and like park her in the corner, you know? I like roll in and there's like all the clients and everything.
Oh my God.
Hi, everyone. I'm a successful actor here to audition. This is my sleeping child.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, shame goes way out the window, I think, once you have a kid.
Sure.
Kid, you're just like, it is what it is, friends. Like, most places were pretty nice about it. There's exceptions to that, but it's like you got to do it. You got to do what you got to do.
I mean, I think the sort of like benefit of it, the benefit of this, of a gig-based business like this is it's more like, it's less important like who you are in like in that lobby and more who you are in the room.
Right. Oh, yeah.
So if they want you, they want you. And also
that's
like
true.
Just because you're bringing a child with you doesn't mean that you're an irresponsible monster, right?
No, like, I'm more just thinking.
Like, no. So they're like, oh, fuck that guy. He brought a baby in here.
No, I think that's all in my own. Like, I think it's probably just weird. Like, they're probably like, this guy's weird. Or you know what? Even just the, like, I've gotten over being overly sensitive to this, but there is a certain amount of, like, dad toting around the kid that
sure
yeah like I guess I don't think the most if I wanted to seem like the most successful actor would yeah. I be like here I am with my child I just prefer this like no right. I'd have some you know
some other solution doing,
yeah, yeah some other solution so it rarely happened like that but yeah
and I know that we definitely are this is a conversation between dads so we also can't get the full scope of like parenting and performance and comedy with kids because we're missing a lot of different voices in that discussion.
For sure.
But for you and your experience, like, I guess, how have you, what has been that arrangement? You were a stay-at-home dad for a while, right?
Yeah, I would describe myself as a part-time stay-at-home dad. So like I said, I think we sort of settled into a couple days a week of babysitters.
Yeah.
And then we also did a daycare mm-hmm. situation when she was at a certain age.
Yeah.
We also tried like a babysitting co-op. You know, like we tried yeah. a bunch of things on over time. As she grew up, you know, there were different solutions. And now she's in school, you know.
Which is great.
Normal school.
Yeah.
And it's like, and then she has after school some days. You know, and some days doesn't, but.
But I think what I'm wondering is, like, because I think that for a lot of comedians and actors who look at sort of like starting a family, it feels like it's to the detriment of career, right? Like it's a choice
yes,
between
yeah.
the two.
Oh, yeah.
And what I wonder is for you, speaking to you, and I'm sure this would be different to talk to any parent and especially moms, too, who have a different set of, like, you know, expectations that either society or family like sort of puts on them or that they have in this navigating this. It's their body. But for mm-hmm. you having kids, has it been a what's been the impact career wise and how have you navigated that?
Let's see. I think the impact career wise, tough to say. On the one hand, I think it hasn't I wouldn't say it's been a drawback in any way. I think that's probably different for dads or, I mean, that's my guess. Because I was a part-time stay-at-home dad, you know, I didn't feel like, oh, I missed out on auditions because I had to take care of the kid or something because I would still do it, I think,
yeah.
mostly. Or maybe I just wasn't at the part in my career where that mattered as much where, you know, and maybe, like, if you were looking to find, like, trouble, you could say, like, well, it split my focus. But I also think... you know, I often describe it like this to people who are thinking about it. I'll say, like, people think of it only as an energy drain.
Yes.
Like, they think, I won't have enough energy, I won't have enough time.
Mm-hmm.
And what they forget, what they don't know, I guess they haven't forgotten it, is that it's an energy add, too. Like, it doesn't just drain your energy, which it surely does.
Yeah.
It also adds energy because you've, like, added, like, a lot of love to your life and
sure.
a lot of... focus on important things. And, you know, a casting director once told me, this is about parenting, though. she said it's like when you have a kid, it opens up she may have said this exactly. It was like it opens up a whole new part of your heart you didn't know.
Yeah.
Like there's this other part of love you didn't understand, which is sounds a little like mystical or weird. But I think it really is true. You're like, oh, you didn't even know you had that part.
Yes.
So it doesn't take away, like, you're not like subdividing the finite amount of focus you had. You've just gained a new part, kind of.
Yeah. I also like to speak personally too. Yeah. I feel like it gave me focus career-wise in a way that, like, when it was just about me, or, you know, me and my relationship with my wife as an adult who's got her own sort of life happening, you know, going on too, I was much more lax with, like, well, I'll get around to it. You know what I mean? I could procrastinate with a little bit more assurance that, like, if I need to make it up, I'll make it up, you know? I'll stay up all night if I have to.
Right.
And now it's like, nope, we're going to, like, today is about this. Tomorrow is about this. This month is about, like, I'm much more goal mindset and also, like, focused on what do I want to be doing with my time? Because suddenly I have to offer my time to someone else and my focus to someone else, which is awesome and does all the things that you're describing, but also says, when I have the opportunity to be on my own, I'm going to maximize that time in a way that you had nothing kicking, like, for me personally, I had nothing kicking me before that. It was like...
Yeah, it's like a weird kind of a deadline or something. It's like working under deadline all the time,
all
a little
time.
Bit. That sounds bad, but I think it's like, it has that effect where you're like, yeah, I have, like, my calendar, like, is stupid looking because I'll schedule, like, not as much anymore because she's at school, but it used to be like, these 2 hours, I will write. Then 15 minutes after that, I have to go pick her up. And then, you know, after we did daycare, we had a public pre-K, which was half day pre-K.
Yeah.
So for like, we had this nice, like, it was like, oh, she didn't go every day, but when she went the whole day. And then we went to a year of, she goes 5 days a week, but only from 8:20 to like 10:50 or something totally crazy.
That's insane.
It was insane.
That's like enough time to get a coffee.
Oh my God. It was the worst. So literally, just to like show you how much I optimized my time, I would sometimes, I would drop her off and I'd like go right. And then I would go home and then I would pick her up. I'd run with a jogging stroller.
Yeah.
Empty, an empty jogging stroller, get her, put her in there, run the half hour back. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, I'm going to make all these parts work to get my, like, exercise in and get, you know. Yeah, it gives you a lot of focus. You have to have that focus.
Yeah, and no, for sure. Is it, like, where has there been for you, I think the other thing people feel like is in this type of business, that especially if you don't have that steady job, right? If it's gig-based or if you're an actor who's auditioning a lot, that it's like that the financial burden becomes too much to bear. And I'm not saying, like, how'd you make that work, Doug? But I'm more saying, like, how's that balance been for you? Because, again, in my experience, you make it work. It's like once you're in it, you're in it. That's your reality. And so it becomes like you either want to do it or you don't. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's, I mean, everyone's finances are totally so different. I'm not sure. But... like, that's what I've found, too, is you have to make it work. So I made it work.
Yeah.
There are years where I've made, you know, I mean, compared to lots of people, not much money in acting, but I made money.
Yeah.
And then there's some years I never make any money. And so I figured out how to, like, do some, like, freelance stuff. Like, I teach improv.
Yeah.
But, like, to give an example, there were years where we were paying for a daycare. We're not paying for that right now. So you'd think, oh, I feel like super rich because I don't have, you know, $20,000 or whatever that I'm not paying towards daycare. But no, I feel the same. So I'm not like, it's not even being mystical about it. I just don't like the year we had to have $20,000 extra to like make our lives work. We had it.
Yeah.
That isn't true of everybody. I know that's not true, but it seemed totally insane and we had to do it and we made it work somehow.
Yeah.
And maybe... you know, maybe my earning potential would be up if I still had to make it.
Sure.
I don't really know. And the years, you know, with acting, it's like some years are like, oh, cool, the recession hit. No one's making any commercials anymore. Like, you know, and, oh, they're casting all this stuff now or they're not. Or, you know, it's really tricky.
Yeah. It just seems like it adds another piece of the, again, like for me, it's been like it focuses you towards like, yeah, what do I need to do? Like I also right now with a newborn, I know that this next year is going to be shit.
Yeah.
Financially, time wise, it's like I'm ready for this period of like,
yeah,
it's going to be a chaotic year. And I need to accept that. But like once I've accepted that, I feel way more able to be like, okay, what are the pieces of this that I need to tick off so I can make it work?
Totally.
You know, because like right now it's like double daycare shit.
And yeah.
Like the golden sort of like ticket to me is that universal pre-K that's like a year and a half away.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm like, until then, bear down. And then like, then get past that hurdle.
You know, actually, that's like a super zen thing, I think, that's like good about parenting is it makes you recognize your limitations.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, maybe before you have a kid, like you're like, I can do it all, and you try to do it all.
Yeah.
Or maybe as you get older and it happens to coincide with having a kid, you realize you can't do it all.
Yeah.
But definitely when you know, like when you just look at this year and you're like, this is going to be a year I'm in the shit. Like, well, fucking settle in. Like, so you just do it. You just settle in.
Yeah.
And like, you're in the shit. And I mean, look, the worst thing to me is if you're at home with your kid and you're trying to like tap out an email about work. Like, you have to do that sometimes, but the less you can do that, the like you screw both things at the same, you know?
Yeah.
Like, so I mean, I know that's not possible for everyone, but I was a little lucky actually when Phoebe was very little, believe it or not, there were no iPhones. Like, so, you know, she was born in 2006. So yeah. I had like a some time before, this is like not the new
before
reality.
The takeover.
But before, like, literally, I would be sitting at a table with her and, like, if I wanted to do something, like, what am I going to pull up my laptop while we're, like, watercoloring? Like, I had just water, like, we're just doing watercolors, you know? And, like, being able to, that's actually maybe a good improv thing to think about is, like, you know, you get trained in improv to be in the moment, and parenting, the more you're able to do that, the better. So it's like you can have those moments where you're like, oh, you kind of recognize from your improv training, you're like, oh, I see what's happening here. I just have to be present and listen in a way that maybe if you didn't have improv training, you wouldn't think of it that way.
That makes sense. Definitely. And I also think that's better for, you talk about them too, like when you're thinking about the experience of like the kid, they're going, like, that's a better way. That's how they exist.
Yeah.
Like, their minds, they are very present all the time. And,
yeah.
And that's why they're often asking so much of you, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, you have to sort of accept that, like, you've got to be there with them or else that's where the problems come in. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If I am distracted, I feel like that's when the worst behavior starts because ultimately it's about wanting your attention.
You know? Yeah. There's a little tip that's in the book that I didn't come up with, that someone gave to me, which was especially true of like little kids,
mm-hmm.
which is like they're not giving you a hard time. They're having a hard time.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, sometimes you definitely feel like they're giving you a hard time.
Yeah.
But like when you can flip it and think like, oh, no, they're having a hard time. And that's causing your hard time potentially.
Sure.
Like, there's a lot of joking in the book about, you know, it's like, yeah, like, why is my kid such a dick? Well, they're acting like dicks.
Yeah.
But it's easy also as they get older, they seem more like people.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, when they're really, like, when they're babies, they're just like weird, like animals.
Yeah.
But when they're like kind of a weird person. They're like, you're like, Dad, I think that, you know, foxes are the best animal or whatever. And it's just like your weird friend.
Yeah.
Like you treat them like you're like, all right, cool kid. Hey, let's go get some coffee. And they're like, I don't want. They freak out on you. You're like, wait, why don't you just be cool, dude? Like, because you kind of forget they're actually a kid.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, for sure. And it's also, yeah, I also think it's like really fun. Like talk about like improv, like bringing it back to like improv training and stuff like that. Like interacting with a kid.
Yeah, man, the yes and shit.
It's so fun.
It's so fun.
And it's like having somebody who's always down to, like, you know, just sort of, like, be silly with you at all times, if you're willing to sort of be that person.
Yeah, I mean, like, as two old improv hands here, you may have forgotten, but, like, definitely in teaching, you know, like, you see students come in, and I teach 201 a lot. And 101, you know, 101's where you're breaking people down and kind of being like, not breaking them down like you're a drill sergeant, but like getting them over being feeling like they can't be silly.
Yeah.
And you know how much you love when students can be silly. So anyway, you've trained to be silly, like, which you got to be for kids. Like, they're so funny and so silly. And also you can play act with them, you know, where you're, I don't know, just
all
like,
the time.
All the time. Like,
yeah.
You know, I'm always like giving my daughter a hard time and like, you know, trying to josh her. And she's now, since she's 11 now, she's started to be like like embrace sarcasm in a real big way.
Sure.
But that's even fun, you know? So I don't know. Yeah. Like the improv training, the yes anding, like also, one of the big things I think is when you're not enjoying parenting is sometimes when your intention with like what they want to do and what you want to do, like you said, sometimes it's about just kind of going with them, saying like, okay, like sometimes they want to do things. You're like, that's never going to work. Like, right. I know my daughter sometimes will be like, let's raise boxes around the apartment, you know, and you're just like, that's not going to like the box is going to fall apart. You know, just, you can see kind of at the end of the, it's just like, let's do something that will work. But sometimes you got to just do their dumb idea that ends up being funny and it doesn't work, but it's just to let them dictate the terms of what you're doing, you know?
Yeah. And I think it's also that same thing that's like part of what in improv feels like when you have the best discoveries is when you sort of release yourself from needing to control the idea. Right?
Yes, yeah.
And I would say that that's a similar quality of parenting where it's like sometimes there is that aspect of it that's like when you release from saying, I need to control this, I'm going to let you have that control, even though you're completely out of control or just don't know how to like harness your own power in exactly the kind of way you're saying, some of the most fun things happen. And also that's the best way for them to be learning about their own limitations and also capabilities too, right?
Yeah. Giving, like, think about if you're a little kid, how much control you have over anything.
Almost none.
like none. And to some extent, like, not that I'm like a scientist or anything, but like developmentally, like that's something that they, like early on, they don't care because they don't know what control is. And like, and then they get to be at a point where they're like, they want to do everything themselves and they want to choose things. And so at that point, like, it's fun to give them that control, you know, like to give over to them and say, and especially like, I don't know what your dad was like and what like feeling like being a dad is like, but I know there are lots of dads out there. My dad wasn't like this, but there are lots of dads out there that they feel, you see them around that have to control everything, right? You see them and it's like, sit down, do this. And you're like, it would be so much easier to not, that's just seems like such an outmoded feeling. Like you want kids to be able to kind of do, like not do anything, like they're
right,
you know, but to have some control and being, you know, from improv that being in control is like overrated.
Sure. Yeah. And I think that's why like it feels like there's some crossover there. I think that that improv training helps you in that parenting, you know, world to sort of like give yourself the latitude to release from needing to control everything all the time, but like having enough control to help guide. It's more like a guidance than it is like a dictation.
Yeah.
Right?
And like, and also just being like a good listener, like you get trained in improv to be a good listener where you're like, you can, I think kind of, I feel like I'm pretty good at reading kids, not every kid, but like, you know, when I meet a kid and like, you kind of get, they're getting at something like some people are not good at reading people, but improv gets you good at that.
Yeah.
Or anyway, maybe people that excel at improv, not to say that I excel at improv, everybody, but you know, like people who are good at improv, they're often good at reading people.
Yeah.
And where you're often like, as a teacher, I'm often interpreting, improv scenes I'm seeing happening. And like I know what they're trying to get at.
Yeah.
And then can say, well, here's a way it would have worked better to get at that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where a partner might be like, wait, I didn't understand what you were trying to get at. It's the same with kids. Like kids don't always tell you exactly what they want or whatever, but sometimes you can intuit it or you can sense from how they are, like what they want to be doing.
Yeah. You know? No, I feel like, that makes a lot of sense. And it feels like there's a connection there because kids are essentially learning how to communicate just period, right?
Right.
How to express themselves, how to hear other people, empathy, sort of like good sort of like social, you know, coexistence and like what, again, their capabilities and limitations are. And there is an aspect of improv training that is about doing that all over again. Right? Because even the sort of like when we come across in improv, like difficult, like people sort of like you sort of like bear their psyche a little bit, right? Especially if you're doing a lot of reps, like you peel back the layers of like what you've been trained to, how you've been trained to interact and how you've been trained to frame things in conversation, and it becomes just like more subconscious, like thought that comes forward, right? Especially the people who have a hard time with it.
Yeah, there's I think about people who come into class sometimes, and they're like, so they've got their walls up big time, uh-huh. and sometimes you'll have that breakthrough where they just like they kind of get it, like, oh, I just got to drop this, but you know. It's hard. It's hard at the beginning. I think you get used to, as you get better at improv and play with better people too. Like, so as you and your peers get better, right?
Yeah.
You have more success. So it rewards you for having dropped those walls.
Sure.
It's hard to come into a class and be like, oh, I guess I just put on a weird voice and like pretend I'm in a car. And
yeah.
like,
yeah.
you know, meanwhile, like outside of class, you're like people. I don't know. You have to have your shields up all the time, or you think you do, or you've been told to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, yeah. I think that, yeah, so much like, and this just to go back to like personal improv approach, for me, it's always been about how do I get inside of somebody else's head? That's where the most fun is. It's like being like, where is it that you want to go?
That's not how I do it.
No? How do you do it?
No, I'm just kidding. No, that sounds really good. You mean get inside your partner, like figure out what your partner's getting at?
Yeah, yeah.
yeah.
I'll give you an example. Like there was a discussion that happened on Facebook that was about the warm-up mind meld.
Yeah.
Right? I remember people saying like a lot of strong opinions and a lot of like very senior people in the community's opinions saying that's not a good warm-up.
Huh.
Personally, I find that I love that warm-up because to me I'm like looking at the context of not just the sort of words of it, right?
Yes.
But also who that person is. What do I think Doug is going to say? As opposed to the next person who has just tagged out, right?
Yeah.
And when it becomes that game, I think that like it's the most base level of like being like, how do I communicate with you? How do I communicate with you?
Well, that's funny. I'm not sure if I have a strong opinion on it except to say that when I teach, like when I introduce it, people are always like, wait, so how do we do it? And I'm like, you meld your minds.
Yeah.
I'm kind of kidding, but I'm like, I don't want to tell you how to do it because it's not a good thing to tell you. Like, you'll figure out how you do it. Now, some people think I'll just like process of elimination, bracket my way to it. So it's like a microphone. What's the common denominator between these two things? But and maybe I don't even know if I'm good at the game, but what what I think of it just what you are saying is like, what is Nate gonna say?
Yeah.
That's it. Like part of that's I'm shooting it to your brain.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to guess what you would say.
Sure.
Like from the things we've had previously, where do we arrive at? In maybe the most vague way. You know, like, I don't have a rule. You know, I'm kind of bad with rules sometimes. Like, sometimes people say, like, well, how do you do that? I don't know. And I'm just like, the way it happens. Like, sometimes improv instruction, this is where my previous class would be like, what the hell is Doug talking about? Sometimes I think, I'm hoping this isn't just lazy teaching, but I don't explain the whole way it would work because part of the thing is just to figure it out. I don't know. Definitely mind meld. It's, you know, you can overthink what's the purpose of every warm-up exercise. Sometimes it's just fun.
Yeah.
Everyone loves that thing.
No,
it's
that's
like,
that's
like
fair.
You know, I like in look, sometimes people are like, if I have to read, like, some of them I say, why is this happen? Like, why do we do this? But then some I'm like, well, all you really need to do is like it's fun. So like Hotspot, you could say it builds support and listening, or I don't know what. But, like, also, it's just active, and people, like, come into a class, they need to jump around a little bit and sing, you know?
Yeah. I mean, there's such a crossover between parenting and improv, right?
Sure.
In that you never know where it's going to go.
You don't.
But you have to deal with it. You have to deal with wherever it goes. There's no escaping.
It's going somewhere.
That's right. Well, really cool. And we're going to pick up this conversation in part two, where we talk about the book and how the book came together and that process of becoming a published author and the more like career side of Doug. But thanks for sitting down and doing this long form conversation, Doug.
My pleasure.
Appreciate it. The book again is Man Versus Child. You can pick it up in any bookstore, whether online or IRL, mm-hmm. and you should do that. And don't forget, y'all, tune in to the next episode of this show when we pick up our La Ronde in Los Angeles next Monday. Have a happy Memorial Day, everybody, and pick up part two of this episode on the UCB Digital Podcast, which releases tomorrow on iTunes.com/UCB Comedy. It's a fun part two of this conversation. We hope you'll join us then. Thanks so much, y'all.
You've been listening to the UCB Longform Conversations podcast on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and review at iTunes.com/UCB Comedy. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center. Find cutting-edge comedy videos on YouTube and Vimeo at UCB Comedy. Find our live shows at UCBtheater.com and connect with us on social media at UCB Comedy.